This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast. And in a shocking break from tradition, it is Saturday night. We named the podcast the Blue Monday podcast. Then gradually, as Joe does the Wigfield Saturday night dance, which is why you should always come and watch on YouTube. Then we started recording on Sunday. Now we're recording on Saturday. But what we're going to attempt tonight is a live Saturday night kind of post-match podcast, which does mean you can get involved. We will go by the normal structure. So we won't do much in terms of news, but we'd love to get your thoughts as Joe gives his analysis of the game. Richard should be arriving inebriated about halfway through the show.
I did drive past him on the way home earlier today. I did honk my horn at him and he looked shocked. But in fairness, it was quite loud and right in his ear.
You didn't deliberately drive for a puddle next to him?
No, it hadn't rained, sadly.
So please do get involved. So we'll go low on news, essentially. We're going to go straight into today's game. But we must just say hello first off to Joe Fares. Joe, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, good. Always happier after 3 points on Saturday evening. It always makes the beer taste a little bit sweeter.
Kind of binary, isn't it? It's just a good night after a win on a Saturday. We're not normally in this, although we did do, I suppose, the post-game shows on midweeks, but they often didn't turn out too well, didn't they? I don't know what our batting average was on.
Yeah, it was tough. Oh, come and talk to us about Northampton 3, Ipswich 0.
Well, those ones
three,
were
Ipswich 0.
Those ones were pretty entertaining because people were so furious, and we did our group therapy sessions. But do say hello, get your thoughts in on today's game, get your questions in. We'll try not to make it too much of a problem for those listening after the fact on podcast, but we do want to encourage those people who are involved right now to get involved, and we'll say hello to a few of them there. Charlie, Michael, Skip on the screen there. Joe, it was Ipswich Town 2, Shrewsbury 1. Before we even touch this one, does this kind of fall into those category of games that we've had since we've been in League One of, and I know opposition fans hate us when we say things like this, but of, you know, we should win this game if all's going well.
Well, we have to win it. Am I? Can you hear me now? Quickly,
very clearly. Yeah, you're great.
Okay, yeah. So my microphone has been a bit sick. Yeah, you've especially with the start we've had, which is sort of the 2 wins in 10 games, or 10 points from 10 games. If there's any chance of us doing anything this season, Shrewsbury at home and then Cambridge away next week are just 2 games you simply have to win. We need to, within the next 7, 8, 9 games, be up to at least 1.5 points per game to go from there. So Shrewsbury at home, they're sort of second bottom of the league. And like I said, no excuses. And I'm And so I think Paul Cook knew that that's the case as well. When you read in the comments, both from him and Mark Ashton in the programme today, they know that the pressure's on and they know they needed to win, and we did win.
Yeah, and again, if any Trues fans do happen to catch this on YouTube, that's in no way patronising to your club, but Joe's totally right. If our club wants a realistic, like you say, move into the top half and then in theory into playoffs, then it's a game want to...
Well, like I say, Shrewsbury are 23rd in the table at the moment, so their goal this season is surely now make sure that they stay up. And the difference between going up and staying down isn't going to be getting points away at Ipswich and other more hopeful promotion contenders. It's about picking up points against their sort of direct rivals.
And that will still shake out until Christmas time, essentially, won't it? Right, keep your comments coming in. We'll get into some specifics and then we'll really major on these about sort of 20 or 25 minutes into the show. Joe, pretty much expected 11. Beans, I suppose some questions we were asking about the goalkeeper, but... given that we knew Bersant Celina was not going to be around. I'll read the 11 and then you give me your thoughts on it. Hladke in goal, Penny and Danasian, the fullbacks, Edmondson and Burgess, the centre-backs, double pivot of Evans and Morsi, Fraser inside left, Burns inside right. Chaplin starts at 10. And can I call him a goal machine? I think I can.
Without a doubt.
Thank you, Joe. The goal machine, Macaulay Bon, up top. Get your thoughts in on the 11 in the chat. Would you have done anything different? And Joe Fares, what are your thoughts?
Well, I don't think anyone was really expecting any changes other than Bersant Celina. And I think we'd all agreed that was going to be the case. And it was Connor Chaplin or Kyle Edwards, really. I know I listened on a preview show. I think Rich and Mikey thought it would be Kyle Edwards, but I just thought from Tuesday's game, Kyle Edwards just didn't look quite at it. Connor Chaplin looked really good in there as a 10. So I thought that it was going to be sort of Connor Chaplin, and it did turn out to be the case on that. And I think subsequently it proved to be the right decision because I thought he was probably our man of the match today.
I'm very binary on this, Joe. In my head, that Championship Player of the Month that Chaplin won for Barnsley, I just can't get that out of my head when I'm judging on him in League One, that you've essentially got the Championship Player of the Month from not that long ago playing in League One. And I saw a thing of Alex Ferguson talking to the UFC fighter. We were talking about this the other day, saying you've got to start your best players. And I just, in my head, I just can't see the season going on much longer without Chaplin essentially becoming a first team. Do you agree?
I'm sure we'll get to it in the comments sort of later on in the show with the questions. But there was a couple of people on the phone and on Radio Suffolk after the game talking about who is that three going to be behind and where I sit. We were sort of trying to work out that during the game as well. What is that best three behind, well, Bon, effectively, not behind the strikers, behind Bon, isn't it?
Yeah, get your thoughts in. Don't get emotional about Sofa Score ratings. They're calculated by an algorithm. No emotion goes into them. Do not reply with any emotion because it doesn't work that way. On the bench, Holly, Nsiala, Edwards, who you mentioned, Aluko, Elmazuni, Harper and Piggott.
With regards to the bench, just quickly, that was something that I was talking about in the game, and it did turn out to be the case. But I don't really understand why we don't have Kane Vincent-Young on the bench or even Luke Wolfen ahead of Nsiala, because I was saying during the game, if one of the fullbacks gets injured, what is going to happen? And subsequently, Matt Penny did go off injured, and we end up with Toto Nsiala playing right back, and it's a sort of a strange way to go there. But I don't understand why. I say you've got Aluko, Harper, Edwards, Elmazine. They can all sort of play in that position behind the strikers, but defensively you've got one player, and that is just an out and out centre back. So I don't know. It just seems strange to not have Vincent Young. Bearing in mind that if a centre back goes off injured, Danasian could go into the centre, and you're not really that any weaker. But maybe Cook, after seeing Nsiala play right back, has learned his lesson a little bit on that one. And we'll see next week. Not that Toto did anything wrong, but
I mean,
flying fullback in the Paul Cook mould, is he?
I'll try and read Paul Cook's mind, Joe. Other than it being an injury, the only thing I can possibly suggest is he's hell bent on Kevin Keegan style. And when we talk about the goals for and against, when we analyse the league table, he he just considers that he wants as many match winner options as possible. But yeah, I can't come up with it. That doesn't feel like a very sensible argument.
No, I think Harper's the odd man out there, really, isn't he? Because Cook has sort of said he sees him as a 10 rather than one of the two deeper players. So Nwazuni covers that role. And then you've got Aluko and Edwards and Harper covering the roles behind it. But you've also got Chaplin and Fraser, who are all versatile and can play centrally if they need to. So, strange one.
Yeah, no, I agree. I can only think, given your assessment, that he wasn't ready to be on the bench. The Shrewsbury team under good old Steve Cotterill, Morosi in goal, who I saw at Coventry last season, Matt Pennington, who we know all about, Ethan Ebanks, Landell, Aaron Pierre. I remember seeing Shrewsbury a couple of times with their gigantic back three that they built on. Nurse, Leahy, Davis and Bennett. You can still find him sort of the wing-backs in central midfield there. Sean Wally, who was the chap who got sent off a couple of games ago at Portman Road, wasn't he? And Ryan Bowman and Daniel Udo up top. And Joe, my understanding is that up until taking the lead through Connor Chaplin on 23 minutes, so bang on a quarter of the game, it was a pretty dominant display. Can you take me up to that first goal? Guys, get your thoughts on in the comments and we'll read some of them out in the chat. And, you know, what sounded like a very good performance up to that point.
Yeah, we were playing relatively well until that point. We sort of were moving the ball quite well. We were sort of trying to stretch to that, maybe not moving as quickly as we maybe should do, but that they were very sort of defensive. I know that sort of says 3-4-1-2 when you look at it, but it was more sort of 5-3-1-1 when it actually sort of came down to it. It was a really, really defensive setup from them. But we just, I know we sort of worked it quite well a few times without really creating a huge amount. And then sort of a couple of nice sort of balls into the box, which didn't go from there. And then it turned out sort of the goal does come from one of those balls into the box where we've worked it wide, and it's sort of Matt Penny swinging over a deep cross. Really, there's only one man in there to aim at, and it's Macaulay Bonn, and he picks him out. It's a brilliant header from Bonn, and like I said, we thought it was in, and then the keeper claws it out, and there's Connor Chaplin, sort of Johnny on the spot, just to smash it home. And it's probably, maybe we weren't banging on the door, but it was deserved to go ahead at that point.
Can I be a bit cantankerous, Joe? I read a lot of comments about 4-4, effing 2 and players in the box. This is the number 9 heading at goal and the number 10 following in, where the mythical second striker that certain aspects of the fan base would love to see. I'm being a bit sarcastic about it, but do you take my point?
Yeah, but also, if you were to look at our sort of heat maps or whatever, but Connor Chaplin was playing as a striker, really. He wasn't really playing as a 10 at that point. They were, when you looked at it, they were playing as a front two for a lot of that first half.
There you go. Just bring it up on the other screen, Joe. I think that'll, it skews slightly left, but very much inside the penalty box for a lot of his touches by the look of it, Joe.
Yeah. No, he was good today. He was the one player getting on the ball and trying to sort of link play between the midfield and the attack, which you'd expect him to.
This fascinates me now because we discuss something that we have to discuss a hell of a lot, which nobody can see, which is a mentality or a fragility or a confidence or what have you, because Shrewsbury are going to equalise pretty much, 5 minutes removed from the first goal. And talk to me about the goal, Joe, but I'm kind of more interested in the effect of the goal then on the mentality of the players afterwards as well.
Well, it was almost like our goal affected our mentality, that as soon as we scored, we'd seem to drop deeper and deeper. And
oh, interesting. What, prior to
the play really slowed down, and we sort of were able to give them a sort of a foothold back into the game. And then, I say, it's a sort of long ball, sort of a cross-field pass, really, that wins the header. And Sam Morsi just isn't quite strong enough. I think there's a little kick there, and I think
he's expecting a bigger kick, and he's preparing himself to go down and draw what we would all say is a clever foul, and it doesn't really come, does it?
No, there's not quite enough there. And Wally just, sort of just gets ahead of them and just curls a left foot sharp right behind it. Kladke has absolutely zero chance of getting there. It just flies in. It's a really good goal, but sort of Shrewsbury just sort of come out of their shell a little bit, and we just, I don't know, we just let them, and we just carried on like that. But we just went from there, and then from there till half time, it was really, really poor. The pace that we moved the ball at, the intensity. I say Cameron Burgess, I thought, sort of, without trying to pick on one player individually, I just thought he just moves the ball so slowly, and it just ended up back at his feet, and he played to Penny, but by the time it sort of got there, we didn't really have any chance, and it was slow. And then we'd get a free kick, and we'd be at a throw in, and we'd meander over to take the throw in. It's like, come on, try and get back on the front foot here. And interesting, you listen to Paul Cook on Radio Suffolk after the game, and far from coming out with an effusive sort of interview after that performance, it was, no, 23 minutes, we played really well. And then what happened after that, I don't know. It's mentality. We didn't show the right mentality. And he was sort of very critical of his side. And like I say, I think deservedly so, because we were all sitting there in the stands thinking, this is rubbish, really, from the point that they scored. It's like something needs to happen at half time, and it did. Cook had obviously seen the same things that we were seeing in the ground, which is obviously what you want to know as a fan, what you want to see, that the manager is seeing what you're seeing. He'd obviously given them a rocket up at half time, because they came out and they looked a different side in the second half.
Yeah. How can I phrase this without upsetting everybody? Again, we're struggling to cope with what I would call good lower division football again. I know Sammy Morsi got in trouble with his comments, but this idea of a diagonal ball on top of the fullback and, you know, winning a header in that area is kind of what got Shrewsbury up the pitch and sort of created that chance, wasn't it, Joe?
It's more just struggling to deal with setbacks is what I find the issue as. As soon as we have a setback.
Well, can I just read Steve's question and I think you can go down that rabbit hole you were going to go down there, Joe. First 25 minutes and last 15 minutes, best movement I've seen for ages. Do you think we are complacent when we take the lead? Now, I'm commenting from afar today, so I'll bow to Steve's superior knowledge and Joe's and Richard's when he comes on. I was going to be under the impression that the air was sucked out of the stadium by the goal. But from what you've said and what Steve said, it's a nervousness about being a goal up, right?
Yeah, and like I said, I don't think it's complacency. I just think it's almost like a panic. Like we don't know whether we want to try and go for a second goal or whether it's almost like we just want to sit back and hope a second goal happens, as opposed to actively go out and try and score one, because we're so sort of fearful of letting one in sometimes. But no, it's very strange. And sort of that Portman Road issue, we've seen everything. We've seen us sort of going behind in games and scoring late equalisers. We've seen us going ahead in games like MK Dons and conceding equalisers. We've got 2-0 up against Wimbledon and conceded two goals to equalise. And we've gone, like I said, behind at Morecambe. Sort of, and we just, there isn't really been a game state other than that sort of Doncaster game where we felt comfortable at any point.
Right,
where
we probably
should do, whether we're sort of 2-0 up or 2-0 down. It doesn't seem to know where to go. But everyone just starts moving the ball around slowly. And I think it's fear of making a mistake sometimes, that everyone's content to play the easy ball. But once you've played 10 easy balls in a row, you end up in a position where you're sort of nearer your own goal than their goal. Somebody then has to try and sort of do something with it, and you end up just giving it away and allowing them to come onto you.
Yeah, I was just really interested in what you're saying about game state, Joe, because it feels like a pretty comfortable game state is 0-0 at at kickoff, and you know, going forward, they're kind of more comfortable at 0-0, sort of trying to make the play than perhaps when they've taken the lead. We've got a couple of comments on that. Noel, spot on, a weird collective panic. Bod, if we got 2-0 up, then we walk it. Yet again, we get the opposite of sniff and make it hard. Agreed on both of them. Joe, you said about Paul Cook spotting stuff and it looking better after half time. What did you mean by that?
Well, I just think you could tell that they needed sort of either someone to instill some confidence in them or tell them basically just to play higher up the pitch, because there was a spell, sort of 15, 20 minutes in the second half, where the centre-backs are 5 yards inside their half and the whole game is just played there. And every time they get the ball back, all they can do is give it straight back to us. And we just keep going and keep going. And it wasn't like we were creating a huge amount of chances, because we were. We should have been creating more, really. But they just didn't have a kick, really, at us. And like I think you just showed on Sofa Score the sort of attacking...
When
you see this sort of second half on there, it's just all us, and we just kept them. Like I say, from the start of the second half, we just dominated the game from that point on, and bar a sort of 5 minute spell where nothing really happened, we were just totally on top there. And yeah, the intensity did drop, but it didn't drop like it did in the first half. It dropped because maybe the players were running out of energy a little bit, rather than just running out of ideas.
Sure. If you're watching in the chat right now, get your questions in. We'll just wrap up the second half and then we'll go to some of your questions. So stick your questions in the chat and we'll get involved with them. Joe, the equaliser comes, and a good old set play on 54, Lee Evans to Macaulay Bonn, go figure. Do you know what I thought when I saw this goal? And I'm not comparing the two players. I thought of David Johnson, who would sort score all types of goals, but would like pop up with a header like that from a set play. And you'd be like, oh, which of our centre-halves has stuck that one in? Oh, Johnson scored that one as well, didn't he? Do you know what I'm saying? Talk me through goal.
No, I said that to the guy in front of me. Just reminds me of... He said Macaulay Bonn reminds him of John Walters. I think he does in general play that he likes to... He's bigger than you realise, and he likes to sort of leave one on the centre-backs a bit and sort of have a word of them and getting their ears. But the goal is just, like I say, it just comes alive when the ball's in the box, like David Johnson used to do. And this one's a brilliant header. Just makes that run onto the front post. Good corner from Evans, but it's a brilliant header. It's one of those real sort of towering leaps, and just the flicks on. And like I say, even if you have someone on the post, and it will stop that because it's so well directed into that corner. And what was great as well in the video he did with the young girl, Maddie.
Yeah, we got a couple of comments on.
Yeah, he said if he scored a goal, he'd come and see her. He said that, the young disabled girl, and when he scored the goal, you could see he just went straight out to pick her up, blew her a kiss, and went there. And it's like, oh, he's a real great guy, and like I say, I'm sure every Ipswich fan wants it, but we've just got to tie him down on a sort of, you've got to tie him down on a permanent deal, don't you? Whatever it takes, I think. Let's just raid the pension fund for a few more million quid to ensure that Macaulay Bonn stays at Ipswich for the rest of his career.
Get your questions in the chat, please, for the next segment. I know we've got a few on Twitter, but please fire them up there before we get to that part of the show. So, yeah, Macaulay Bonn, 9th goal of the season, 8th goal in the past 7 games, and a goal every 84 minutes. So better than a goal a game at League One level. Everybody wants a striker like that in their team. Joe, you've kind of mentioned sort of how we've struggled to play at one goal ahead. How was it at 2-1? And sort of talk to me about the changes we saw. Edwards, NCR, you've already mentioned for injury, and Piggott come in. How did we see this one out?
We were pretty comfortable, really. We kept on the front foot and we kept pushing, but sort of what just went from there, just kept pushing and pushing, but not desperately pushing. But it was sort of a game of sort of poor refereeing decisions from that point on. There was a sort of nice ball over the top. I think it was Lee Evans that played, or maybe Scott Fraser that played it into Macaulay Bonn, who had the run on I think it was Ebanks Landell had the run on him. Ebanks Landell just sort of puts an arm out and the ball juggles on his arm, and the ref somehow doesn't give it as a what I assume would have been a red card as well, because Bonn was in. They go down the other end 30 seconds later, and it looked a penalty to Shrewsbury after that. Late in the game, Scott Fraser, I thought it was a dive. He went down very easily, but he insisted on the radio it wasn't. And I've seen a couple of people saying on iFollow said no, he was kicked, but he got booked for that. There's a couple of other challenges in there. I'd say Elliot Bennett defended very well against Kyle Edwards a couple of times. Kyle Edwards must have been fouled 5 times in the 15 minutes he had on the pitch. He's just unplayable at times, but... No, it was bar the sort of the one penalty shout, Shrewsbury didn't trouble us at all. So we managed the game well that way, just by sort of having sort of positive territory and positive possession of the ball rather than anything like sniffing it out, time wasting. We were sort of just positive with the ball and kept it there and kept them in their half, really, which is what you want to do.
Yeah. My take on these refereeing decisions is at least he was lenient in all cases. Do you know what I mean? Where the you know, the possible foul on Morsi before the goal, he didn't give it, you know. All those penalty shouts, he didn't give it. So sometimes it gets a bit more infuriating. Look, it's very difficult to have a conversation about referees without club bias rendering it completely not credible within about 5 seconds, because everyone thinks every decision goes against their team, don't they? But at least, I guess, Joe, he was kind of lenient in all cases. But yeah, it's no good being lenient, I guess, if you're not making the correct calls.
Yeah, whether they're trying to level things out, you don't know. But it's
they'd never admit that either.
It wasn't a brilliant display. But Steve Cotterill, I haven't read his comments after the game, but he was over there giving the ref pelters after the game for ages. I just thought, well, yeah, he's missed one of yours, but he's missed two of ours, and we've sort of totally dominated the game. But I don't know. I haven't seen him all closely, but we'll see.
Yeah, keep your questions coming in, guys. There's a few at the moment on Steve Cotterill. That's often more for the the Shrewsbury fans, isn't it? Rather than you know, it's building that sort of siege mentality that you've talked about. The brilliant way Sam Allardyce managed to do that and still keep a narrative going 21 years later about a certain game. But we won't.
One thing I saw from Steve Cotterill about Ryan Bowman that he said, because he went off injured, but there was no, we didn't seem to know why he went down, but he came out and said that he'd had a heart rate of 250 beats per minute or something like that. So they had to take him off precautionary and get him across the hospital. So hopefully the greatest Bowman is okay after that and we'll be fine. And it was just nothing more than just a strange issue. But yeah, hopefully he's fine with that.
Yeah. Fingers crossed for him. So let's just bang through some of these numbers, Joe, and see if it kind of backs up with your eye test. Look, 71% on the possession, 8 shots to 5, only 3 to 2 on target, 4 corners to 2, all of the big numbers in our favour. I suppose the pleasing one is 0 big chances conceded, only 1 created. So you can, you know, you'd like a bit more of a gap in that. But if you look at the numbers in isolation, and I always say that with a caveat because someone will pipe up, if you look at the numbers in isolation, it looks like a viable win 9 times out of 10 if you replay that game state.
Yeah, without a doubt. That was a bog-standard 1-2-goal victory performance and deserved.
Absolutely. Right, let's have a look at the league table. Keep your questions coming in. We're going to get to them very imminently. Plymouth have jumped to the top of the table with Wickham in second place. I pause on those two teams because in 4 and 5 games' time, we have those two away from home within the space of 4 days. The current
play 5-1-5
top two, right? Yeah, I think above us, I'm just scanning through. I know Sheffield Wednesday won today, Burton obviously lost. Pompey definitely didn't play because we saw Danny Cowley at the stadium. So we find ourselves in 14th position with my glass incredibly half full. That is 2 points off the top half, which is, I guess, if you're going to climb the table, the first, you know, the first baby step to make. 6 points off the playoff positions. And we were in a position where, well, we can see we are in a position where only Cambridge, Fleetwood and Doncaster below us, and Wigan and Sunderland above us have played fewer games. The really good number, and take performances because I know there's been a couple of bangers in these five, but 10 points in 5 games.
And that's since the Bolton game as well, where we lost 5-2. So that's 10 points in 5 since then.
Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we know full well that if you have 4 or 5 10 points in 5 games in, you know, not short order, you will be moving up the table if you're anywhere near that 2 points per game. 4 wins in 6 in all competitions. We try and make head nor hair out of these Pizza Cup games, but I can come and sit here and say 4 wins in 6 because of the victory against Gillingham. So
it was quite funny because on in the post-match interview, Brennan Woolley was interviewing Scott Fraser and he said, "Oh, you've got back-to-back victories now." And he was like, "What, back-to-back home games?" He's like, "A back-to-back victory." He's like, "The Gillingham game." Oh yes. Almost like that was a reserve team game that didn't count for anything.
Well, there will be a few players.
When he said probably back-to-back victories, I was thinking he was talking about winning the Cambridge game next week to get back-to-back victories. I totally forgot about the Gillingham game as well.
In terms of these goal scoring and conceding numbers, nobody in the division has now scored more than Town. MK are tied up. There's only a couple of teams who have conceded more. I can see Accrington, Pompey, Cheltenham. And I believe that Jules on Sky, who sits in for Jeff Stelling, said at home, and I think I'm correct on this, out of anyone in the 92, most goals scored and most goals conceded. So Portman Road is like the goal capital. It's like QPR under Mark Warburton, isn't it? It's like the goal capital. Joe, I've tried to put an incredibly positive spin. How do you read that league table, first off? And can I get excited about 2 points per game across five games?
Yeah, well, it's probably the best it's looked at, probably at any point this season. It's probably the best it's looked from there, which I know isn't saying a lot. But like I say, it's difficult because you look at the games we've won, and it's Doncaster at home, Shrewsbury at home, two games you've simply got to win. Even if you're in a relegation battle, they're two games you want to try and win. So while it's 10 points from five games, which is exactly what we needed post-Bolton, I think until we can turn that into a good 18, 20 points over 10 games, I don't think it really means anything as yet. So we go to Cambridge and win next Saturday, and I think that's we're still probably in the realms of what's expected. And then it's Portsmouth away, and then it's can we get a win there? Because, like I said, we need to start picking the low-hanging fruit of the division. And I think today was one of those. I think Cambridge away is one of those where you've just simply got to win if you've got any sort of aspirations of challenging at the very top of the table. So it's today was almost a bit of a lose-lose situation because you win, it's just seen as, well, you should have won anyway. Are you just papering over the cracks? Is momentum changing? And if you lose, then it's emergency alarms going off. Is Paul Cook's job safe? Bloody blah. So all we could do today was win, and that's what we've done. And we've got 10 points for five games, and we move up five places in the table, and we increase our positive goal difference. So you just have to take it for what it is. And like I say, but I don't think anyone's sitting there thinking, "Oh, we've cracked it now." Since that Bolton game, we've got things sorted because while we've had 10 points for five games, the Accrington performance was so poor. Except for Wednesday at home, we sort of nicked a point there. So it's not been a very flowing 10 points for five games, but it doesn't need to be. If we get 10 points from the next five games, then we'll be even higher up the table. I think everyone will be saying, yep, Cook has turned the corner and off we go.
Yeah, and we'll talk about those five games in a sec. Joe, is it still a relevant conversation now? The conversation we had across the last two seasons and statistics about never beating anybody in the top six. You just used the term low-hanging fruit. It does still feel like a relevant conversation that, especially with a Pompey, Plymouth, Wickham, etc. coming up, that, and we said this for the longest time, if you're not in the top two, you're in the playoffs, ergo you have to beat across three games two teams that have finished between third and sixth, and you kind of want to see some evidence of that. Is that still a relevant conversation?
Well, I think it's more relevant this year because we've dropped so many points against teams that you wouldn't expect to be in that sort of top 8 to 10. We've dropped points at Morecambe. We've dropped points versus AFC Wimbledon. We've dropped points at Accrington. We've dropped points Cheltenham, Burton. I don't think we'd expect any of those teams to be in the top eight come the end of the season. And I'd say we've dropped points from those, we can't then not get the wins against the top teams or we're just going to be nowhere. Where Lambert had for all his faults, he did have a pretty impeccable record against the teams in the sort of bottom 6 to 8 of the season.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect your world online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Keep your questions coming in. We're going to start going to them now. I think we'll expect Richard at some point so we can get his take on the action, see if it matches up with Joe's. Charlie asks a question that we have to address quite often and completely understandably. Will Bonn become permanent? And where are we with this now, Joe? Because essentially, for those listening on pod, Joe's crossing his fingers. What is going to be, if you're Macaulay Bonn's agent, what is going to be the state of play with a player who's clearly going to be sought after now because he's scoring goals? And what is most attractive to Macaulay Bonn? And is a permanent move to Ipswich alongside, I don't know, who's halfway up the championship? Bristol City sticking in a bid for him.
Well, I think like Macaulay Bonn has continued to live in Ipswich for his whole career. Wherever he's been based, he's continued to live here. So there is definitely an element of what sort of in American sports they call a hometown discount, where you stay with your team, and rather than signing a contract for $10 million a year and going to a different team, you might sign one for $9 million a year to stay where you are. So, but the offers have to be in the same stratosphere, if that makes sense. He's not going to sign here for $6,000 a week if he can get $26,000 a week somewhere else.
No.
And goal scorers are always going to be sort of worth big money. So that's what it comes down to, really. It's how close can we get a deal done before anybody else tries to is sort of point number one. Can we get this deal done now, effectively, to come in for the January window? So we sort of stop any of these questions in the bud. We decide we wanted him as our long-term number 18.
And twice as good as a number 9, yeah?
We just want him as a long-term thing up front. He agrees to it. He signs a long-term contract on a decent wage that suits it. Or do we just have to let the season play out and see where we are at the end of it? Because if we get to the end of the season and he scored 30 goals, someone's going to come and offer a good chunk of money. And what happens then? Like I say, I'm sure he'd love to stay at Ipswich, and he's made no secret of that fact. But we just need to sort of try and get the deal done as quickly as possible when we could get him tied down for as long as possible.
We'll bring Rich in and get his thoughts in just a sec. I was just really interested where you were saying that about maybe a championship team blowing us out of the water in terms of salary. That can only be a parachute team. And then you wonder, because like, I don't see a bigger gap between what Wigan can offer or what Ipswich or Sunderland can offer compared to, again, Peterborough.
Or he's earning already Blackpool. At QPR, isn't it? He's
or what he's already making at QPR, indeed. So, yeah, lots of stuff on Bonn. Right, let's bring Richard in. Rich, we're mid-questions, but let's just get your take just on the game. I think Joe's been sort of fairly positive, you know, fairly viable performance, and we're exalting the values of 10 points across five games with lots of caveats that, you know, there's 10 points and there's 10 points. But what was your take on today?
Yeah, I can understand that statistically, on paper, this is a good outcome. Obviously, we're not going to grumble about getting wins. I guess if you were to score a win out of 10, you know, Doncaster was a 10 out of 10. Today was nowhere near a 10 out of 10, was it? It was more of a 6 out of 10 kind of winning performance, if that makes sense. I think my personal reflections is I was hoping for more evidence of the gelling, and perhaps the absence of Selena made that difficult today. I've seen and heard post-match conversations with Fraser, and I'm not surprised that he's a little bit frustrated that he's not being used in the position where he did so well for MK Dons. But Chaplin came in today and did well, obviously scored.
Just quickly, Rich, sorry to interrupt, but I was with him on Radio Suffolk, but he was saying that MK Dons, he played on the left-hand side as an eight on the left-hand side.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
So he was saying he was playing as a left-hand side on an eight, and now he's being asked to play more as an inside sort of in that inside channel there. So it's
number 11.
We all seem to think he was playing as a 10 at MK Dons, but he was saying no, he was sort of in a free, he was a sort of left of the eights there effectively. So an interesting one there. And we just don't play with those in our formation, do we?
Yeah, that's true. And it, you know, we spoke about Louis Barry midweek, didn't we, Ben? About, you know, is he overrated or underused? And again, I think he feels in a similar pattern. I mean, not that it's a specific issue of today's game necessarily. It just seemed to me that configuration with Selena in there with Burns seemed to work better, didn't it? But I think, yeah, we take the win, don't we? We take the 3 points. But we spoke on the pre-match show at great length in similar fashion to how we spoke about Doncaster, about how today shouldn't be a, you know, there's no excuses today. And I just felt that we were a little bit wanting, unfortunately. But we take the win and we move on, as Mick would say. We go on to Cambridge, don't we, and hope to continue the form. Because as you say, on paper, I think in the last few matches, it's kind of 2 points a game-ish, isn't it? So you can't grumble at that. You just hope for more, given what we've got.
I think if you listen to Cook's post-match as well, he's very much of that same opinion, that he was not happy at all with the performance, especially sort of after we scored the goal in the first half. So
yeah, the second half of the first half, we were particularly poor.
Yeah. When you walk out of a game and you think we haven't played that well, but we've won, you don't want to hear the managers coming out saying you're brilliant. You want the manager to say what he said today.
It's a little bit chalk and cheese compared to Lambert, who probably would have said today was an amazing win. I couldn't have asked for anything
Brazil
more.
Brazil 1970 level of performance. Yeah, right. Just quickly, just a bit more from you, Rich. Joe was quite high on the first 20 minutes. Are you concurring with that?
Exactly. The first half was a half of two halves, wasn't it? And up to the point we scored, we were utterly dominant. I can't remember Shrewsbury having a touch in our half. Do you know what I mean? And Edmondson and Burgess were camped out on the halfway line and we were utterly dominant, pushing forward. And it just seemed to, the goal seemed to take the wind out of our sails, which is crazy. Because
Joe was even saying pre-goal, like that we scored. And I mean, I can't speak on this, you two can, but we scored and immediately kind of got a bit nervy. Anyway, we're mid questions, Richard. So let's throw one at you, in fact, because I think I know what Joe thinks about this. Michael, with all of the ball our centre halves have, is there a case for Wolfie, who is better on the ball, to be in the team? Now, look, obviously, and I'm trying to speak for Michael, he's not expecting us to have the equivalent of Rio Ferdinand in League One, but that part of the game and circulating the ball from centre half, if you're telling me they're way up the pitch, they'll bring their heat maps up while you answer. Would Wolfenden be better, or is he completely wedded to Burgess and Edmondson now?
Yeah, I think he is. Firstly, good day, Michael, down in Brisbane. Hello to you. Good to see you on the live stream. I just think now there's the commitment to Burgess and Edmondson, which I think trumps any other decision. And I agree with Michael that I think there's always a case for Luke Wolfenden, particularly in a team that is seeking to play out. And today the centre-backs had a lot of the ball. And we saw it, even against Sheffield Wednesday, a lot of passes between the two centre-backs. Crikey. And Wolfenden's a bit more progressive than that.
Over 200 touches between them. And Richard, you sat next to me at Wigan. And because we're such nerds, we were jokingly trying to guess how many touches Reece James had had, because he seemed to be the only player on the pitch. And that was just over 100. So that is an absurdly high number of touches for both centre-halves to have.
Yeah, but, I just found that Burgess sort of moves the ball so slowly as well, didn't he, in the second half? And I know that it gives you the balance of a right foot and a left footer, but I don't think, like I say, I think both Toto Nsiala and Luke Wolfenden could be quite aggrieved that they're not in the team. Because I know that we've signed these two players for £1.5 million between them, and we're probably paying them a lot of money. But it does seem that I don't think they're a huge amount better than sort of Nsiala and Wolfenden. And I think even on Tuesday night, you saw what Wolfenden can do with the ball, where he can step forward into the midfield, because there was probably a 20-minute period at the end of that first half where we did not commit a single body forward with the ball. We didn't step into midfield once. We didn't try and sort of beat a press or anything. All it was Edmondson to Burgess. Burgess taking a touch, moving it across to Penny. Penny not really having any option but what to do with it, and either coming back to Burgess and...
Can I just push back on that? Is there a certain amount of Shrewsbury who you described as five and then four sitting in a low block and against the better side, that possibly won't happen?
It won't, but it has to, doesn't it? Otherwise, what else can you do? The best teams in the league have to move the worst teams in the league off their spot, effectively. Mm. You can't just let them get back and pass the ball around slowly and say, oh, well, we can move it through then because then they're sort of in a good shape. All teams are organised now. They all know when to press. They all have their triggers. They can all move. And somebody has to take that risk and play the ball there and take a first-time touch around the corner. And it sort of invariably, it was when the ball went into Connor Chaplin's feet, when we could work it there, that things did seem to come from there.
I know we've got questions coming up, Ben, about Morsi. I thought the central midfield today didn't really help us in trying to do something different to get through Shrewsbury. Well, you know, a lot of it was down the flanks, wasn't it? The fullbacks. And I just think Wolfenden might have, you know, I guess to Michael's question, I'm not advocating it for it at this stage, because I just think we need to keep the selection as consistent as possible, because this gelling that we keep talking about happens because you've got players familiar with where each other are going to be and so on. And that still looks embryonic even today for me. So I would persevere with that. But I do think there was one instance where Edmondson took the ball forward, a nice kind of gaping hole appeared for him and he ran through to it. But that was one instance. And I do think that if this doesn't really click, and if our central midfielders don't get us up the pitch either, then I think there's a case for Wolfenden, to Michael's question.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because centre-backs are probably one of the only positions in the team where you don't sort of take a horses-for-courses approach. Like today, you think, oh, we're playing Shrewsbury, we're going to have a lot of the ball, so we'll
keep them together and play them every week,
Oh, we're away at Rotherham, so we know we're going to get Michael Smith dominating against us, so we need to stick Cameron Burgess and Toto Nsiala in there to try and deal with it. You just tend to pick your best partnership and hope it works, which is, I think, what Cook has done with Edmondson and Burgess. That's what he sees as our best partnership, and they just need to grow and grow, really, don't they?
Let me just read that just from Noel in the chat there. Feels more secure with Edmondson and Burgess. And in deference to Noel there, centre-half's first job is to, you know, be secure and keep the ball out of the net. And perhaps, this is my hope, I'm trying to persuade myself of this, there's enough quality down with those fullbacks advanced in such a way and with the inside forwards and hopefully getting 3-4 in the box at a time where... Maybe there won't be games where we're concerned about the centre-half circulating the ball. Guys, I'm going to go to another question and then we're going to talk about the next five fixtures. So if anyone's got questions about the next five fixtures, and particularly I'm looking at Pompey away, Plymouth away, Wickham away. If anyone's got questions and thoughts on
Ben, can I have 15 seconds just on Noel's question, because I can't disagree with Noel's point. He's spot on. I think the difference today, particularly in a game like today, is that the centre backs were camped out on the halfway line and in a defensive sense really didn't have a huge amount to do. And when you're up against a team that's going to sit back with all 11 pretty much behind the ball, you need every different option you can get to get the ball forward. And I just don't think that configuration of those two necessarily is as good as an option that Wolfenden might be for that. So I think
both got booked, didn't they, for getting sort of spun quite badly.
They did. Yeah. But yeah, Noel's right. Obviously, the issues defensively have definitely cleaned up in the last few weeks.
Interesting. Let's just bring up Steve's question here. One of my favourite things about this year is how we can replace a quality player with a player with equal quality, from the bench. That hasn't been a case for quite a while. I mean, Joe, he's obviously right. I know a lot of us get a bit anxious about, oh, hang on, what's the team? Who's the best player? And then when we figure out what the team is, oh, who's getting left out? Why are they getting left out?
Sort of saying to the guy next to me or the guy in front of me is that rather.
Can you imagine Rich being the guy
half
next to Joe at the football? Okay?
I can. I've been that guy. That was very nice.
Wes Burns, right at the start of the second half, he sort of seemed to he made a run to the sideline and he sort of seemed in a lot of pain there. And I know he's managing an Achilles problem. And the next few minutes, he just wasn't getting into the game. Was struggling to run with, and it's like, just get him off. Like, you've got Kyle Edwards sitting on the bench. Just bring Kyle Edwards on for Wes Burns and make sure Burns stays fit, because Burns has been brilliant. And sort of, it's no slight in his performance, but we don't need to risk players when they've got a potential injured Achilles, when they're managing that problem, because we've got such quality on the bench. And you just need to, we need to make sure we use that sometimes, because he kept going to the bench and speaking to Cook, and it's like, bloody get him off. If he'd have got injured today, it would have been sort of real negligence, I think, from the sort of managerial and sort of fitness staff to have not got him off, because he just needed to come off. And I say he had Sonny Aluko and Kyle Edwards on the bench who could both come on and do a more than good job at this.
Let's just have a look at those fixtures then coming up, because we've all, you know, we always talk about 2 points per game, and we've just got 2 points per game from the previous five, but admittedly, these next five, maybe you'd be okay with 9 or 8. I know some of our fans won't. They're going to want to see win all the way up the table. But let's just get our kind of heads around this. So Cambridge away, who are below us in the table, obviously. Then Pompey away within the space of the sort of 4 days there. Fleetwood at home. So that's a 3-game week where you could pad the points total for these five games, with then a week off, and this is hard, down to Plymouth on the Saturday, who've just gone top of the table today, and then Wickham on the Tuesday. How do you see those five then, Joe? I know you talk about 10 points would be lovely, but you need to win 3 of the games.
You look at it there, and if you were to break it down into chunks of 5 games, you've got to beat Cambridge and you've got to beat Fleetwood. And you win those 2 games, and all of a sudden that 5 points,
as your foundation,
that 5 games isn't a disaster if you win those 2.
Agreed.
And then you then try and pick up a win and a draw from the other 3 games. And if you can do that, you look at it and 10 points, yeah. Or even if you picked up 2 or 3 draws from that, I think you'd be happy. You'd be happy enough with that over the next 5 games. But it's why it's so important to win the games that on paper you should win. You've got to beat Cambridge, you've got to beat Fleetwood. Otherwise, you just make it so difficult. You heap so much pressure on yourself. And then, because if you beat Cambridge, you get a point at Portsmouth, you beat Fleetwood, you go to Plymouth in sort of a good run of sort of 4 unbeaten, a good points thing. And you've got that bit more confidence. And then the pressure then goes on to them if they're still top of the league, but they've got to try and beat you. And that should play into our hands if it does that. But Wickham away on that Tuesday night, I'm not looking forward to. That is going to be a brutal welcome back to League One. I know they've been to the Championship and they're back in League One, but at their place, that is just not going to be fun.
Well, what do you think, Rich? You're going all in on that first 3-game week. I tend to agree with Joe. You look for 3 wins across the 5, and the best options are clearly those first 3 games. But 2 away games is the first 2 of the... I know Joe's complained about this on the pod before. Although we had 3 in a week once in a 3-game week, didn't we? Joe was outraged that in the Championship. I think we lost all of them.
We've had 7 home games this season, though, haven't we? So we need to win some away ones.
What are you saying, Rich?
Yeah, I agree with Cambridge. I just think it's going to be very tough. I can see Eric Clacton in the comments talking about how big the game is going to be for Cambridge and their fans. You know, that even the friendly games, we've had sendings off and fighting in pre-season with Cambridge, haven't we? So the idea that it's going to be a walk in the park, I think is going to get a bit of a reality check there. But I agree with Joe that there's literally no excuses anymore in terms of if we want anything for the season, we can't be thinking twice about going there and trying to win. Portsmouth's form up and down, pretty poor actually, and then they turned Sunderland over 4-0, didn't they?
That's a
different proposition there, isn't it? And it's just a shame that all of the tough games really are away from home. But We have. I shudder to raise this, Ben, because you and I like the narrative, don't we?
I just the put narrative... the home table up in the background there, Rich. Sorry, there go. Mate, yeah. Continue on your point in a sec, but yeah, Plymouth have 15 points from 7 at home and are undefeated. Wickham have a 100% record at home. Where is Pompey in there? 10 points from 5. We've just been, if we're going to bang on about us getting 10 points from 5, we should mention that Pompey have got 10 points from 5 at home so far. Sorry, Rich, continue your thoughts.
No, no. What I was going to say is these are our first run of games against what you would class as superior opposition in League One. You know, we've largely had what I would suggest is mid-table to lower mid-table teams, haven't we? And we've at times been found wanting and at other times have done what is expected of us. It'll be really interesting to see us up against a team like Plymouth. That will be a test of our credentials, because Plymouth, good footballing team, arguably punching above their weight, but obviously they're on merit in respect to results. But two teams that will try to attack each other. It'll be just interesting to see how we rank against those teams. You know, when it's like today, I think it's more of a struggle for us, you know, to break teams down. I wonder whether we might have more joy against the teams who are likely to attack us a bit more, like Plymouth, counter-attacking options with Selena and, you know, the pace we've got with Edwards in the team and Bond's physicality might work well for us. I don't know. But, yeah, you do look at those away games against the top teams and you do shudder a little bit at the moment.
Well, away from home, things have got to get better. Like last year, like I say, when Cook came in, we lost to Northampton badly. We lost to AFC Wimbledon badly. We drew with Rochdale. We had a really poor record. I think we beat Swindon at the end of the season, but other than that, it was poor. And then this year, we've gone to Burton.
I've just brought it up, Joe. Only Crewe, Shrewsbury and Doncaster have fewer points away from home, although we have played two games fewer than a few.
Like I said, last year, we had a really poor away record under Cook. I think it was like 3 draws, 4 defeats and a win. This year, it's like I say, Burton lost, Cheltenham lost, Lincoln won, Accrington lost. Well, maybe we can look at that and maybe say, well, Lincoln are probably the best of those four sides and we actually got a result there. So maybe that game played into us a bit more than going there into a sort of, like, because Burton were a very physical side. I was at that game. Cheltenham, obviously, they had Ben Toad on the long throw and we struggled to deal with that. And Accrington just bullied us sort of from start to finish. Well, in the second half especially, they just bullied us there. Not through physicality, but just pressing, getting in our faces. And so they weren't. It's not like people talk about like a long ball team launching it into us. Like that was sort of what the Cheltenham game was. But Accrington weren't. They just sort of being cliche, they just wanted it more than us. And we've got to go to these grounds and we've got to turn up and we've got to want it as much as the other team do. And then see off the first 20 minutes, half an hour, and then grow into the game and then let our quality show at that point. But you've got to earn the right to play.
Absolutely. That mental fragility is still there as well. We saw it even today.
We did. Before you came on, we already did 10 minutes on that mental fragility. That's not going anywhere.
Said that himself after the game as well, so he's aware of it.
Yeah,
but you can see these teams.
Go on, Rich, sorry.
So I was just going to say, you can see especially away at these teams that, you know, you look up the league table and there they are. I just wonder whether this is a team that is going to dig in and try and get something out of it or just, you know, go into damage limitation.
I quote the great David Diamond. We're soft, Ben. We're soft. And that is a long-held view and problem that I struggle to disagree with. And just quickly, those of you watching on YouTube will see in the background here, I went to a laboratory and got my FIFA stats properly measured. Came out at 92, you'll be pleased to see. But Richard, we have a giveaway where you can win a copy of this computer game. Would you like to tell us all about it, Rich?
Yeah, FIFA 22 has come out on the PlayStation 1 and the Nintendo 64, I think. And so to mark that momentous occasion, we have a copy of the game on Xbox One to give away. The details are on our Twitter account, but I can divulge them here. All we need you to do is follow our Twitter. And if you don't follow our Twitter, why not? You need to give us a retweet of the tweet that's the competition tweet, and you need to subscribe to our YouTube channel. And again, why wouldn't you already be subscribing to our wonderful YouTube channel? And we will announce the winner next week. We probably might do it on the pre-match show, but we will certainly tweet it out there. And we will pick someone randomly using Guinevere, the team selection machine. And good luck to everyone involved. Give it a retweet, tell your friends, and
Sarcasm incoming from Fares. I can see it on his face. Look at him.
If you're one of the people desperate for a FIFA game who's sitting there saying, where's your YouTube channel? How do we find it? You're probably not. you're probably not going to be randomly selected.
Yeah.
So unnecessary.
We shouldn't have used that FIFA 22 hashtag, by the way. But if anyone new subscribers are watching, having, you know, joined in from the FIFA competition, hello to you. You're very welcome.
Right, we're going to go a couple more minutes. I can see a couple more questions in here, which we can take. Obviously, Michael's asking me to sing. You've got to fight for the right. I only know those words of that song. You've got to fight. To the right. Oh, you've got it wrong.
Can we get some Foreigner?
Oh, yes. You can. Hey, I didn't embarrass myself on that gig. I'm very not match fit as a musician at the moment, but there we go. Right. I'm sorry, I know Noel's had a couple, but it's a good question. Is it just me or is the standard in League One this season so much higher? I'm a big believer that that is true, Richard, and it's not just this season. It's been building, as I call it, the place former Premier League clubs go to die.
Yeah, I look at MK Dons is a great example. Look at MK Dons. Liam Manning, manager of the month, I think, for September in League One. And MK Dons has been a team that has tried to do the right things for the last few years, and maybe he's now having a bit of success. But I'd argue that their fundamentals, their philosophy, is a lot clearer than the philosophy potentially at teams like Ipswich, maybe Sunderland before that. I think a lot of teams come down and think, if I've got a better roster than most of the teams in the division, I get promoted. And I actually think there's a lot of really excellent coaches. There's a lot of excellent teams who are happy to put in the hours with the research, the analytics, are happy to establish a philosophy, are happy to build a team, and are given the time to do it. And I actually think we're seeing a lot of teams coming to kind of the peak of their powers. I'd class
MK
Dons. And
mix them with the traditional Pompey, Oxford, Ipswich, Sunderland. And
I think on Rich's point there, I think there's certain teams that haven't really got the time to come up with a philosophy at this level. Ipswich can't sit there and say, this is a 3-year plan to get out of this league. Like,
neither can Sunderland.
Milton Keynes can, and Sunderland can't, and Sheffield Wednesday can't. And whilst it may take them 3 years or more to get out of the league, in our case, but really, this is our first attempt at it, we can't be like Oxford or Milton Keynes and Lincoln and try and build something slowly, because the place where we need to build something slowly is in the Championship to try and get back to the Premier League. But we've got to get back there first, and like I say, you see these teams, like I say, Milton Keynes are fucking brilliant Bolton and I say they looked, from what I heard, they were impressive again at Sheffield Wednesday today. They didn't win, but they're going to be there or thereabouts to the playoffs, and there's a lot of teams that will be.
Morecambe scored us this season. You know, they've got good positive momentum from their promotion last season
and that's with a brand new manager and a brand new squad, really. They've looked sharp. They're above us in the league, and yeah, they probably aren't going to get into the top six, but they're not going to go down.
Let's try and get through another couple of questions. Let's go to Joseph on this one. With Cook expressing his dissatisfaction tonight, are we about to see some permanent changes to the first team? I'm not sure we are we, Joe?
I don't think so. No, I think he just wants those playing to do better, to improve their mentality.
HCH, sorry, I'll just give him a shout out.
These guys have the shirts at the moment, and it's up to them to prove that they can't get the mentality. If, like I say, if we end up with another Accrington performance next week, and then at that point maybe it goes from there and we try and push on. But I don't think there's going to be sweeping changes.
You have to let me take this one from Aaron, because I can go off on a big rant now. Aaron, who quite reasonably asks, what are your views on people getting impatient with the team passing it around the back? Surely it's better than making rash decisions. Aaron, you will never stop football fans yelling silly stuff at the football stadium. Obviously, we do believe in free speech on the Blue Monday podcast. So anyone who buys a ticket and wants to shout, get rid of it, get it forward, is perfectly entitled to do so. I hope football players are good enough in terms of shutting that out. I was actually at Fulham for Scott Parker's first home game, sat in front of...
That's what you pay the money for at Fulham, isn't it?
A couple of fans who, would like to have seen the ball literally fired into the box at every point. So, I wouldn't worry. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
The only thing I'd say about that is at the end of the first half today, there is a line of knocking the ball long all the time and passing it at the back. And it was just passing for passing's sake. And we weren't going anywhere with it. And somebody needed to do something. I think Craig texted into the group, at some point, somebody somebody needs to be told you have to actually try and take a man out of the game here.
You have to beat a man or play through the lines.
Yeah, and it was... I think the crowd did need to fire them up a little bit, and I think it probably helped the crowd doing that, because by the time sort of Cook went into the change room, he was quite clear what the crowd were thinking and what he was thinking about it.
Yeah, Mikey, you're very right, Joe. There's grades of it, Rich, isn't there?
Yeah, I was going to say Mikey tried to get folk shouting "hoof it" and then
get rid of it,
and then slagging players off for passing it around the back into room 101. I think he lost on the vote.
Well, Richard, in terms of our room 101 things, we've had a corner played to the near post resulting in a goal today, and a player playing at number 10 following in the number 9 to score a goal in the wake of lots of people wanting a front two. So, yeah, room 101's in for a bit of a struggle today, isn't it? Right. I think we are all there. What we would love you to do is give us your feedback on, particularly after home games, this show, you know, going live, and we can tune into your either distaste or elation immediately after the fact. And if there's a want to do it, we will always listen to our audience. And if we can sum up the numbers, and us losers don't have anything better to do at 7 p.m. on a Saturday night,
I don't have to run up Spring Road every week. Yeah, that'd be nice.
we'll come back here. Joe said he beeped at you on the way home.
He did. I tuned into the start. Yeah, he was swerving all over the shop, Ben. It was crazy. I had to dive out of the way.
He'll be on dash cam somewhere. Fares, won't he? Look at this. I'm gonna pad this and only read the positive comments. Love it live, Charlie. Says Charlie. Andres, love the live show. There we go.
What I mentioned earlier in the show was, what are people thinking for the free behind the strike at the moment? Where are we on that?
Rich?
As in, what personnel would I pick?
Yeah.
I still quite like Fraser. I feel like I'm in the kind of minority here. But I suspect if it was ideal, I would be having Edwards on the left, Salina in the middle, and Burns on the right. To me, that's a no-brainer configuration.
Yeah, I think I'd be going Salina on the left, Chaplin in the middle, with Burns on the right at the moment.
Yeah, I'm just not really sold on Chaplin yet, even though he had a good enough game today. I feel like he's like Cook's boys, but maybe I'm being harsh. I like Edwards.
Interesting. Though, I suspect if we went to if we sampled 100 people in the fabled words of Les Dennis, you'd probably get a very... Actually, it might be a good poll, actually, Rich. Maybe do that on Twitter. Yeah. But can I go back to the comment that came in earlier? Isn't it lovely to have two players for each of those positions off the front? Right. James says, there you go, is England are one up.
Is it Connor Cody? I backed him to score.
Is that all?
I don't know. Right. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Joe, where can we find you on Twitter?
At Joe Fares.
And what sort of stuff can people expect from you on Twitter, Bants. Joe?
Hashtag just Bants, yeah.
General Bants.
Richard, where can we find you on Twitter? And what sort of stuff can people expect from you, Richard?
I like talking about politics. I work in the energy sector, so come and chat to me about that. No, don't. Please don't. I post football goals from years gone by and stuff about football.
There you go. He gave you two reasons not to follow, followed by one very good reason.
I don't talk about politics as much as I can help it. At Ipswich, and also on Instagram. Have we mentioned the FSAs, by the way? I can briefly talk.
No, go ahead, go on.
Yeah, so it's always a little bit uncomfortable as kind of asking for your support and stuff, particularly when it comes to awards, which is obviously not why we do this kind of stuff. But it is the Football Supporters Awards at the moment. We've tweeted the link out. And there's a kind of all kinds of things that you can vote on, including Pundit of the Year, Male and Female Footballer of the Year, Writers of the Year, online content, which we would endorse your support for TWTD. But if you want to vote for Club Podcast of the Year, vote for Blue Monday. We'd be very grateful for that. There's a little link in a Survey Monkey and all that stuff. If you feel motivated and willing to do that, we'd be very grateful. So thank you very much.
There you go. And you can find us at Blue Monday ITFC on Twitter. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. If these shows continue after the fact, then TikTok, we don't stop. YouTube is the place.
MySpace. Yep.
What are you doing, Joe? Unbelievable.
We are on LinkedIn, though, if you can find us.
Oh, we're on LinkedIn. There you go. We're on every social network. But I would push you towards YouTube, where you can get involved in in these live shows here. Right. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And thank you for listening back after the fact. I was supposed to plug, you can contribute financially if you really, really do feel like a lovely person. All the details are on Twitter, Acast supporter feature. Anyway, say goodbye, Joe Fares.
Goodbye, Joe Fares.
Deary me. Let's see if Richard can
I'm
not.
I'm after a few beers, aren't I? I've had three.
After you finish driving, obviously.
I had one shandy and drove home.
There you go. Beautiful. Right. How can I phrase this so Richard won't mock me? Say farewell to the listeners, Richard.
Goodbye, Joe Fares.
There you go. I'm just going to... I'm trying to find the outro, actually. There you go. Right. Thank you, everybody, for watching. And we'll see you on Wednesday with another show, no doubt. Bye-bye.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.